Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program, Today's Issues, here on AFR, American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Ray Pritchard, raised in Kansas City. Walker and I are here in our studios in Tupelo, and Steve Jordahl has crossed the street and is in studio with us. Good morning, Steve.
I got to tell you, it's not that it's a nice day out today, but it always feels good to me when I'm out in the hot sun and walk into the air conditioning. It just is like, oh, yeah.
Glad you were born in this era.
That's right, man. Born in this country. I'm pretty fortunate.
So you're saying air conditioning makes you more patriotic?
It does.
Yeah.
I think it's a contributing factor.
It is.
That's right.
I mean, I've lived in Africa for a while where we didn't have air conditioning, and not as a big fan,
does make you,
so to speak.
It does make you appreciate
it. No pun intended.
Absolutely. Steve works for us here at AFR, but more in particular, OneNewsNow.com, right?
Yeah, American Family News and OneNewsNow.com, yes.
So tell us about OneNewsNow.com.
OneNewsNow.com is your source for every single bit of news that's important to you, or that should be anyway. It is the news source. If you listen to our radio news broadcasts, a lot of those will, most of those, if not all of them, will show up at OneNewsNow.com. Plus, we post videos for you to see, newsmaker videos. We have Associated Press headlines. We post a commentary every now and then. You can go see a reader poll. We just have all kinds of
It is a great news website, folks,
it
that
is.
You need to go to and sign up for our daily news briefs that we send out once a day. So check that out. OneNewsNow.com. OneNewsNow.com is the website. All right, Steve, lead us off here.
Just a little bit of breaking news. The jury in the Paul Manafort fraud case says it is split on at least one count. The panel of six men and six women indicated in a note Tuesday that it is struggling to reach a unanimous verdict and on at least one of the 18 tax and bank fraud charges brought by the special counsel in Virginia. Although the headline says Manafort jury suggests, quote, they cannot come to a consensus on a single count. To my read, that says they can't come on any, but
is that considered a hung jury?
Yeah,
it would be on that one. Yep. On that one.
You tell me that they're having to make decisions on 18 separate counts.
Yes,
and you're telling me they've come back to the judge and said on the first count we can't make a decision.
I don't know if they indicated which count.
I think they're having trouble with one of the 18. It's what I read. This I'm reading a Yahoo News article, and it says they cannot reach a consensus for a single count in the case.
What about the
if
others?
I was to say that would I can't reach a consensus on a single count.
Right, that would mean. Right.
Yeah, I could see how you could read that.
That's the way I thought.
It mean that they're totally stuck on everything.
Maybe.
But But that's not what anybody else in the media is reading it as.
You mean they're saying 17 of them they've come to an agreement on?
At least a single count is the way the Washington Post is putting it.
I'm still confused.
They are.
Am I the only one?
They are hung on at least
not
one count.
Not that it's your fault.
No,
I think we all need clarification, which maybe come out later today. The verbiage there is confusing.
Okay, on the Paul Manafort
If they can't agree on a single count in the way, Steve, you meant it, then we've got a hung jury, right?
Yes.
I mean,
if
they're 0 for 18, then
it's unlikely that they would be 0 for 18, and I'm reading on Fox News right now that the judge has asked them to go back and give it another shot, so more to come. But that's just kind of breaking in the last.
Gotcha.
Let me ask you guys this, since we're all legal experts.
Yes.
Sure.
All right.
I watched Perry Mason.
And I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Express last night, right. Okay, suppose they got agreement. Guilty, not guilty, doesn't matter. Suppose they agreed on 17 out of the 18, whatever combination of guilty and not guilty should be, but they didn't agree, but they couldn't come to consensus on the 18th. Does that blow the whole thing, or what would happen in that circumstance?
That's a good question. I would guess we need Abraham Hamilton III to answer this.
Right. Where's Abe?
Where is Abe? But I'm guessing that he would be guilty on the 17 counts.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be crazy.
They would accept the 17 and just
or guilty or not guilty, but to just throw the whole thing out because you can't agree on one of 18 issues seems nutty,
right?
To me, and that's a legal word you can use, nutty. If you want to, I use it. Anyway, Wolf, good question, Ray, and we will ask. We'll ask Abe about that. Next issue, Steve Jordahl.
Boy, the Pope is saying now that he will meet with victims of clergy sexual abuse in his visit to Ireland this weekend. It's his first
Ireland, I thought it was America where this was more.
It's happening around the world. It's not just in America. And I'll tell you, the reason is because, well, as high as the Vatican. I have a clip. In fact, let's listen to this. This is I want to play you a clip from Austin Roos. He is the head of the Center for Family and Human Rights, a Catholic group. He's a practicing Catholic. Right about now, in somewhere in Washington D.C., he's in Mass every day, noon. So this is what he had to say about the abuse scandal on the heels of the Pittsburgh revelations.
There has been an invasion of the Catholic priesthood by predator homosexuals going on now for 50, 60, 70 years. So it's possible that the Vatican could take it seriously. One of the problems with the Vatican is, you know, there's a lavender mafia at the Vatican too. So I would guess that a report like this can be done in other parts of the country. They try to sanitize it for the homosexuals and therefore lie about the victims. As a regular pew sitter, I want to see heads roll for this.
All right. That was Austin Roos. I have in my hand here a letter from the Bishop of Madison, Wisconsin. His name is Robert Molino. Let me just read a couple lines from what he said.
Who did he write this to?
This is an open letter to dear brothers and sisters in Christ from the Diocese of Madison. And it is dated August 18th. And in this, he says, to be clear, in this specific situation at hand, we are talking about deviant sexual, almost exclusively homosexual acts by clerics. We're also talking about homosexual propositions and abuses against seminarians and young priests by powerful bishops and cardinals. There's been a great deal of effort to keep separate acts which fall under the category of now culturally accepted acts of homosexuality from publicly deplorable acts of pedophilia. That is to say, until recently, the problem of the church had been painted as purely problems of pedophilia. This is clear. There is clear evidence to the contrary. And then he goes on to say, it is time to admit that there is a homosexual subculture within the hierarchy of the Catholic Church that is wreaking great havoc and devastation in the vineyard of the Lord.
This is from a bishop?
This is from a Catholic bishop in Madison. Finally, someone in the Catholic Church is paying attention to what the problem is.
In Madison, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Ray, what do you think about all this?
I think as everybody has noted, this has been around for decades, and people have talked about it, but only now has it broken open. And the Catholic Church is facing a crisis unprecedented, at least in our lifetime. You know, you can't say the greatest. I don't want to say the greatest in 2,000 years, not qualified to make that judgment. But certainly, Steve, in our lifetime, the church now faces a huge crisis of credibility, of moral corruption that has been covered up. And I guess the real question now is the church, and I think it has to go all the way up to the Pope, right? Is the church starting at the top and coming on down? Are they going to have the courage to do the hard things necessary to clean house? We don't yet know the answer to that question.
Ray, is it still the position of the Catholic Church to only allow unmarried men in the priesthood?
Yes. And now there are some exceptions in terms of if you come in, you know, if you come, you're already married and you come in, and there's a few exceptions, but yes, the stated position of the church is you're to be an unmarried man.
Yeah.
And that's where they get their priests. And is that part of the problem? Certainly we from the Protestant side would say, yes, that is part of the problem. The greater problem, Walker, is this has been going on for a long time, and too many people, and too many powerful people have, for whatever reason, have been willing to look the other way
and cover it up. The cover-up part of it is just astounding, because that was what was discovered. You know, this has been, this was a scandal that went, you know, that came out nationally and internationally, what, 7 or 8 years ago?
More than that.
Yeah, way before that.
Late in the 80s and 90s, they were starting to cover
but,
things in Boston.
But the other, the most recent one was in Pennsylvania, and it was, what were the numbers? We'll do it tomorrow.
It was 1,000 victims.
Yeah,
what, a thousand victims. 300, I think, church officials were involved in some way or another. We're talking about the case, Ray, in Pennsylvania last week. The jury came out with that report.
Horrific things in there that, you know, when you read that or look at it, you go, no, somebody knew about this, right? Somebody, this isn't all just coincidence. Somebody in authority knew about this.
No, they're moving priests around.
Right.
They're moving priests. They were moving priests around who were abusing these kids, and they knew about it. That's what they're charging them with, at least in that Pennsylvania situation.
And let me ask you this, Ray. You mentioned the devastating results that this has had on the church, and with regard to the Catholic Church. But with regard to, we just saw the Me Too movement hit Willow Creek Church, which is a massively influential, at least it was, church in evangelical circles and other churches. So here's my question, Ray. Does the Bible talk about a winnowing of the sheep from the tares, the wheat from the tares, the sheep from the goats? Does that apply to the church in the last days, that God's going to purify it a little bit?
First Peter says clearly, judgment begins at the house of God. Mm-hmm. And let me say, I'm an evangelical conservative Protestant, but let's be careful about pointing fingers as if we are in a position of moral superiority. We have sincere, deeply felt differences with the Catholic Church that go back to the Protestant Reformation, right? But let us, as Jesus said, you know, let the one without sin cast the first stone. We're commenting on this because it's in the news, but the problem of sexual immorality is deep and broad, and it isn't just confined to one branch of the Christian church, if that's what you're saying, Steve.
I
was asking, but yes.
Yeah. So that's what we're citing here, though. This is very interesting because this is coming from what Steve was reading was from the office of the bishop in Madison, Wisconsin. And he called it, he's been critical of his church, the Catholic Church, and he called it did you say a subculture?
Yeah, I think that's the third.
This is as a Christian.
In the priesthood.
For the Catholic Church to claim to for other Catholics and the bishops, et cetera, to be Christians also, as we are, even though we're along different denominational lines, this Protestants should care about this just as much as Catholic churchgoers, because this is a reflection on the body of Christ and those leading our churches. Yeah, and I've been sorely disappointed at the leaders in the Catholic Church failing to do things about it. I mean, the Pope's going to meet with the victims. How about you fire the people who are sexually abusing the children? Don't go visit the victims. They don't want to see you. Fire the people who've been doing this stuff, instead of shuffling them around to different parishes so they can prey on other children.
This bishop, one other time, the bishop's name is...
the last page there.
His name is, Most Reverend Robert C. Morlino, Morlino. Anyway, Steve read this earlier, but this bears repeating. He says in his open letter about this whole scandal, this crisis in the Catholic Church, his church, he said, it is time to admit that there is a homosexual subculture within the hierarchy of the Catholic Church that is wreaking great devastation in the vineyard of the Lord. He says the church's teaching is clear that the homosexual inclination is not in itself sinful, but it is intrinsically or disordered in a way that renders any man stably afflicted by it unfit to be a priest. That's real wordy there, but what he's saying is you can't be a practicing homosexual and be a priest.
You can't even be
right.
a non-practicing homosexual or a priest, according to
right.
to what you just read.
Yes, okay.
It's well, not a sin to be tempted to by homosexuality, but it does, he says, it does rule you out for priesthood.
Right.
And that's assuming that the church leaders are enforcing their own bylaws and standards.
Right. That's what he's saying, but he's calling out his bosses, as it were, if you can put it that. He's saying there is a homosexual subculture within the hierarchy of the Catholic Church.
Austin Ruse called it a lavender mafia at the Vatican.
Yeah. Mm. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next up, Steve.
I wanted to talk about what's going on in South Africa, and I want to bring it home. South Africa, they have begun to seize land owned by white farmers at very little, for about a tenth of its value, and they're giving it to their black countrymen. They're just taking white land
this
and giving
it to them.
Is the
government of South Africa?
It is the government. You see, there is a they are trying to test, their constitution. And they want to amend the country's constitution to allow for the expropriation of land without any constitution, but yet they have a list of 139 farms they plan to seize to test out Section 25 of the current constitution. I want you to listen to, this was in 2012, 6 years ago, our Justice Ginsburg was talking. She was in Egypt, and Egypt was looking to draw up its new constitution. This is what she said she would recommend to the Egyptians.
I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. I might look at the Constitution of South Africa. That was a deliberate attempt to have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights, had an independent judiciary. It really is, I think, a great piece of work that was done. Much more recently than the U.S. Constitution, Canada has a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It dates from 1982. You would almost certainly look at the European Convention on Human Rights.
So she would look at Australia, which is now, or South Africa, which is now seizing white-owned land and giving it to its black population. She looked to Canada, their Convention of Human Rights, their Constitution, and the European Union, but she would not look to the U.S. Constitution.
Ginsburg. Yeah, let me get this right. So I just read the headlines about this story in South Africa. Are you saying that the government of the country of South Africa is targeting white landowners or farm owners to seize their property just because they're white?
Yes.
And take it away from them?
Yes.
What I mean, just because they're white?
Well, and this is, I'm trying to look for the statistic I read in here, is what
I thought they were getting along, as it were, in South Africa now that apartheid is over.
A 2017 government audit found that white people own 72% of private farmland in South Africa. According to the 2011 census, there are about 4.6 million white people, accounting for 8.9% of the population. So 72% of the private farmland is owned by 9% of the population. They think that they see that as an inequity that they want to solve. Well, it may be an inequity that they may need to solve, but let me ask you this. If you went and took a working farm, if they gave it to me, I wouldn't know what to do with it. I wouldn't. You give it to just regular somebody out of the ghettos in Johannesburg or something. I think this is going to wreak havoc eventually on the country's economy. Their farms are going to. They don't know. They got to get farmers to farm.
Just anyway, we'll watch that story. I don't know if there's any more to that than we know, but that's
It's violence.
That's a good way to stir up trouble in your own country. Right, where tensions have been for generations.
Right.
So now you're going to go expropriate. Is that the right word? Expropriate.
That's right. Yeah.
Steal. You mean?
Well, that too. but with government sanction. Yeah. Take away the farms from one group and then give that land.
They're doing another group. They're proposing the same thing in this country, but with our income, and they're being a little more clever with it. This is the whole income redistribution thing.
Right.
We as rich people or as white people have way too much money or in the economy. They want to redistribute.
Yeah, that's
it.
Going nowhere. They already redistribute people's.
They're doing it in the form of free college. They're doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean,
form
they're well, but that you know that those are government approved.
Social Security, Medicare.
Huh? Yeah, we already anyway. But what you're talking about is. That could lead to some civil war, perhaps, if they're going to do that in South Africa. Of course, what they're going to say, and we don't have time to revisit history in this way because we just don't, but what they're going to say is the white guys from Britain came down to South Africa and took over the land from...
It was actually the Dutch, but yeah.
Or the Dutch. And they took over the land illegally from
the
tribes who lived there, and then they exploited them, and it's colonialism, and this is payback. That's
because the tribes are the original landowners back from creation.
Right. Of course, you know, when you get into these kind of arguments, to me, you never get to the bottom of it. It's kind of like when they say, you know, the white Europeans came over and to North America and then took land from the Native Americans. As if the Native Americans never took land from the Native Americans, who took land from the Native Americans, who took land from the Native Americans. That's the way of the world since the beginning of time. So, you know, you can say the white Europeans came over here to Plymouth Rock and then moved westward while the Cherokee were slaughtering the Sioux and the Sioux were slaughtering the Choctaws and the Choctaws were slaughtering the Navajos. Why? All over land.
Yes.
Okay, so don't act like there was a sovereign Native American nation set up that Whitey came over here and wiped out. So it's just these kinds of arguments are they get you nowhere because guess what? We can all go back in our family tree and find some injustice somewhere where we were done wrong, and maybe I want reparations from the German of medieval times because my family's family was,
they burned their house down.
They burned our house down. So it's just. You know what? That's just a lot of that is revenge motivated, quite frankly, and it's hateful. Mm-hmm. It is hateful. It's anyway. Next we got you got time for one more story.
Let me just tell you, we can take this up again tomorrow if you want.
Well, you
but
mean
President
history?
President Trump? No, President Trump. Okay. His lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, has a condition that he wants to set on any interview with. With the Mueller team. Let's hear what he wants to set conditions on this.
I wanted to ask for Hillary Clinton treatment. I wanted the report 2 weeks in advance, clearing my client. Then I wanted no oath. Then I wanted just an interview, questions in advance. We didn't get Hillary treatment, but yeah, I wouldn't want it because
no stenographer.
President would have been embarrassed if that ever the case.
So he's willing to sit down.
Good for Rudy.
if those conditions are met,
that's great.
Yeah, now Peter Strzok was the one who interviewed
Hillary,
his goddess, Hillary, and not under oath, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
and gave immunity. Well,
they just have.
We all want the Hillary treatment.
They just have chip and dips and sit around and talk about football. What did they do there, Walker?
Probably a cup of coffee.
Oh, man.
Maybe a donut.
Giving Hillary Clinton, after all was discovered, and they decided not to put her under oath for a testimony. That just blows the mind. Anyway, thank you, Ray.
Thanks, Tim.
Steve, thank you.
My
Walker,
pleasure.
Appreciate yes, it. Our thanks to Brent Creeley for producing the show today. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow.